Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. With the anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing just a day away, we're going to spend some time today hearing from those who survived and from those who made that possible. And so we'll begin at the Boston Medical Center, where today there was a flag-raising ceremony to honor the victims of the attack 1 year ago.
Among them, John Odom, who was standing at the finish line waiting for his daughter to finish the race when one of the bombs went off just 20 feet away.
When I actually first met John, he was technically dead. He had a big piece of metal. It actually went from the outside of his left leg to the inside of the left leg and then went and hit the inside of the right leg. So it was one piece that just went clear across, and it just took out a lot of things along the way.
That's surgeon Jeffrey Kalish, who says the 65-year-old Odom lost so much blood that doctors had to restart his heart twice. Odom's wife, Karen, remembered the paralyzing uncertainty of waiting.
I would say to them every day, just tell me he's going to make it. And they couldn't do that. They didn't know. And then when they did know he was going to make it, they didn't know what making it looked like.
But after 11 surgeries, John Odom did make it. After a grueling rehabilitation, he can now walk with the aid of a brace, which he'll wear for the rest of his life. But this morning, Odom was hopeful, and he said he hopes tomorrow's anniversary can be a turning point for him and others in Boston.
I'm hoping that tomorrow and then the marathon next week draws a closure to last year. And all of us start thinking about where we're going and where the city is at. What did we learn from all this? So we're not continuing to talk and dwell on the things that happened to all of us.
John Odom, a survivor of the Boston Marathon bombings, speaking earlier today at the Boston Medical Center.
And we do take John Odom's words to heart about not dwelling and moving on. But we also want to share some remarkable stories from this past year. One of them comes from volunteer Alicia Chambeau.
And we had just said, what a great day for a marathon. And no sooner had those words been spoken than, the first explosion took off.
Chambeau is a retired Navy medic who lives in Hopkinton. And most years, she hosts runners at her home near the starting line of the Boston Marathon. But last year, Alicia was at the finish line, handing out blankets when the bombs exploded. She came into our studios earlier this morning and told us what happened next. And a caution to listeners, Alicia shares some graphic descriptions of the bomb site.
I never expected to walk into what I walked into. There was sneakers that still had a foot in them. And the blood was everywhere, everywhere. And it was, you could smell it, you could taste it, you could feel it. It was everywhere. Combined with the smoke and the ash of buildings and bomb particles. And it was one of those experiences where you look and you say, is this really happening? Because like you say, it was in downtown Boston. If you're in a uniform and if you're being supported by your government and you're in a war, you're equipped and you expect certain things. Not when you're a spectator at the Boston Marathon, not when you're 7 years old and you're holding your daddy's hand. That should not happen.
Alicia, if I may ask, I mean, I think the thing that keeps turning over in my mind is we've spoken to a couple members of the military who were there assisting on the day, you know, lots of medics, nurses, etc. But I think to myself, yes, your training kicks in, absolutely. I mean, you've got, 20-plus years of training.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, that training is, it's for situations which are, you know, in combat zones, in war zones. But here we were in the middle of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm struggling with this question, but I guess you know what I'm trying to get at? That
I was pissed. Sorry for my language.
It's okay.
But I was mad that somebody could do this to us, to Boston, to the United States, to the world, on such a wonderful day. I was pissed off.
Yeah.
And so determination kicks in.
So where did you go?
I went running towards the finish line. I ran into a police officer, and he said, I'm sorry, you can't enter. I said, I'm a medic. I have to go. And I brushed by him and went to work. So you just have to, you know, make sure that they're put in a shock position and make sure they have to get the tourniquet on, make sure that they get an IV started, make sure that they're coherent of where they are. And, you know, you move. It's unfortunately, it almost becomes like an assembly line
right.
of sorts. You just do the best you can before passing them on to somebody else for the next step.
Well, a little while later, Alicia, you moved to the medical tent and treated a lot of people there, including a young woman named Victoria McGrath. When was she first brought in, and how did you encounter her?
I had just finished bringing a patient in and getting them stabilized and passed her off, this other patient, to the medical staff. And I was walking out the door to go, you know, look for my next patient. And Jimmy was carrying Victoria in, and he's the wonderful, wonderful fireman that you see in all those iconic pictures.
Jimmy Plord, right?
Correct, yeah. Correct. Yeah, he's a wonderful, wonderful man. And we got her on a gurney, and I took one look at her, and I, you know, went through the paces. They were taking the patients in the front of the tent, triaging them out the back of the tent into an ambulance and on to whatever hospital of choice. And I looked at that beautiful face, and of course she's surrounded by medics, mm-hmm. nurses, doctors, EMTs that she doesn't know. And of course we have to establish the degree of her injuries. And so, you know, clothing has to come apart and things like that. And all I could think of was my daughter, Brittany. And I thought, man, she needs somebody. And she looked at me and she said, don't leave me. Please don't leave me. And I didn't. I said, I remember looking at the medic and he said, and I knew there was still work to be done, but I couldn't leave her. Mm-hmm. I thought if that was my baby girl, I'd want her to have another woman who's going to watch out for her and protect her and take care of her and just somebody to focus on. And so I stayed. And we got in the ambulance and I held her hand and I, you know, kissed her like I would my own child and told her she was going to be okay.
Well, you find yourself not only giving medical care, but it seems to me almost equally important emotional care
yeah.
to this young woman. What did that mean to you to be able to do that as the ambulance was heading off to Tufts Medical Center?
I was taking care of my patients. It's, you know, it's patient care. And I wanted to be able to be there in the emergency room to pass on the information to the doctors about, you know, her eyes are pearl and dilated. And, you know, I think it's a possible tibia-fibia alteration, you know. And it's just, you know, you just kick in with the training that you have. And that's what I did. So I was very happy to be there for her. I was happy that she was cognizant enough to give me her mother's cell phone number. It was that was the first call I made when I got out of the emergency room after I kissed her goodbye and they rolled her right into surgery. When I got out of Tufts, I called her mom and her dad and said, you know, did you realize what has happened in Boston? And they didn't know. So I was grateful that I could give her the support, that I could give her parents the support.
When you're a parent hearing that about your child,
yeah.
it's hard to hear the she's going to be okay part, right?
Yeah.
At that phone call that you made to her family, were you more a medic speaking to a parent or a parent speaking to parents?
I was a mother speaking to a mother.
Yeah.
Because I know how difficult hearing that about your baby girl and being 3 hours away, which they were, was hard.
Your family must have been worried about you because they knew that you were down there.
Yeah, that was very difficult because I could feel my phone ringing in the pocket of the jacket that I have on right now, and I could feel it vibrating and ringing, but I couldn't get to it. I couldn't take, you know, I was covered in blood, and I couldn't take my hands off my patient to, you know, to answer a call. And then everything shut down. Then right. there was no service. And I knew that they were going crazy. I knew they were. And I finally got a text come through, and it was from my son. And he said, "It really sucks to have a bomb go off right next to your mom to make you realize how much you love her. Come home safe, Mom." And, you know, I had similar ones from my two daughters, Brittany and Natalie, and, you know, countless people. But, yeah, that was the hard part, was not being able to tell them I'm okay. Yeah. So as soon as, you know, connections came back, that was my first duty, was to... I emailed or texted Brittany, and I said, "I'm okay. Please pass the word." And she did.
I can only imagine the relief that they felt when they got that text from you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was grateful that they were in Hopkinton.
Yeah.
I knew that they were nowhere around Boston, so that was a relief, knowing that they were safe.
I should note that you mentioned the jacket you're wearing, and you're wearing the yellow and blue jacket of last year's marathon.
Yeah.
Is it a special
item? It absolutely is. It absolutely is. Yeah. I take pride wearing this jacket, and I'm excited to see what colors they pick out for this year.
As well you should take pride in it. Yeah. How's the year been like for you since then?
I'm okay. I know there's people that are struggling, and unfortunately will never get over what they went through. When you respond on an ambulance, it's because somebody's choking. It's because somebody had a heart attack. It's an accident that you're trying to recover from. The Boston Marathon was not an accident. It was a planned out tragedy. And that is what made me so angry.
Do you still feel angry about it?
I do. I feel angry, but I feel so determined.
For people listening out there, what would you tell them about why it's important to remember this day a year later?
History plays a role in all of us, in all of our lives. Where you came from, where you grew up, what you have experienced. And the people that experienced the Boston Marathon last year, everybody with a conscience rose up and roared that this is wrong and this should not happen. And it is important for all of us to stay focused and remember that day and not let the evil in the world overtake humanity.
Where are you going to be on the 21st this year?
I am going to be at the finish line, girlfriend. You couldn't keep me away. I will be there. And this year, it's not Mylar blankets. It's Mylar ponchos. It's going to be a beautiful marathon. It's going to be a beautiful day. Yeah. And you've got a lot of determined runners out there.
Yeah. Well, Alicia Chambeau is a retired Navy medic. She lives in Hopkinton. She was a volunteer at the finish line of the Boston Marathon last year, and she'll be there again this year on the 21st. Alicia, thank you so much for all you did that day and also for coming in today and speaking with me. It's a real honor and pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
Coming up, 1 year on, a story of recovery, hope, and new beginnings. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.